Hi, Samaich, I'm Shai.
Hello,
I'm
Daniela. How are
Hi.
You?
The last one was excellent, by the way.
Thank you.
The first
Thanks,
one was really...
Okay, worthwhile. So I'm glad we're back.
I also loved your story on the film.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you for letting me know that.
Yes, it was really riotous, actually, one part of it, the fact that you were saying that he lives, like, right across the street from you, and
yes.
a Brooklynite watching that, you know, in Borough Park, that's what you call right across the street. He lives, like, half a mile away from you, this guy.
That is funny. Is that where you're from?
Yeah, from Borough Park, uh-huh.
Borough Park, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Where's the phone?
Danielle, I was talking to someone who came to one of the Brooklyn Kiev training seminars in Brooklyn, and he told me that as you were speaking, he was getting the chills because he has a family, an Israeli family, who moved in across the street from him.
Right.
They just redid his house. They just, like, you know, whatever, they were working on the house by themselves, you know, like Israelis do. And he's like, as he's sitting there, he's like, oh, no, now what do I do? Now I have a real advice. Like, you know, until now I had an excuse for what I wasn't doing. But as he told him the story, he was just picturing in his own mind that this is the situation he's in.
Wow.
I had spoken to him when he went through steps that he'll go through, you know.
Wow.
He doesn't have Ger Hasidim coming to his house who need air conditioning, so he's going to have to find another excuse to go across the street.
That's true. Wow. But that's on point that you never know who's listening and who's experiencing and who's going to be affected by it. Wow. I appreciate it. Thank you for telling me.
Right. It's amazing. You know, every time it's amazing.
Because I'm getting bored of the story, but but the truth is, it's such a chizuk that I can't get bored of the story.
I think you have to move out of Monsi to somewhere else and get a new story.
Great idea.
But, yeah, it's an amazing thing. As I, being involved with everyone's, the e-groups and stuff, I see so many great stories. And what you learn is, mamas is the hashkacha process of the effect somebody has. So someone just being in a store that they don't usually go to and seeing someone and making the right impression. And it's not like, sometimes it's in the normal everyday life, they went out of their way and they found someone, but sometimes it's just like their eyes were opened because of the Kiddush training seminar and the situation popped itself in the face and now they knew what to do.
Thank you.
So I think that's
amazing.
That's one of the greatest effects the Kiddush training seminar has.
It's
but
true.
Before
it's
you
true.
Get started, because I know tonight you have a lot to do, we didn't do too much last week, I'll just quickly give an intro again before you start.
Sure.
Just, first of all, whoever wants either last week's recording or this, hopefully this one now, they can, first of all, go to Kiev.com if they have internet. Or they can...
No, sorry to interrupt. Maybe you could already put it on star 5.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that. That's a good idea.
Did you hear me?
Okay, very good. Yes. So whoever wants the recording of last week's Step 1, you could find it at Kiev.com. You go there, you could download it. You could also call the office if you need it. And the number there is 646-291-6191. 646-291-6191. Or you can email maybe your information at conferencecalls@projectinspire.com. conferencecall@projectinspire.com. So that's first of all. So hopefully we have last week and hopefully we'll have tonight also. Also, again, just to, as the summer months come up, I'd like to just point out that very often people leave their habitat that they're used to and go somewhere new, whether it's on a vacation or whether it's up to the mountains. And it's an opportunity to meet new people and to minimally, as Daniel will talk about, for the first step, to make a very big Kiddush Hashem wherever they go, as long as there's that constant awareness that that we have that opportunity and there are people around us that we're affecting. So preparing now, the hachana, you know, the hachana is now the 2 weeks coming up to this summer vacation, is a very important time to think about practical applications of Kiruv in our own life that's going to be there in the coming weeks. That was number two. Number three is just, I'd just like to point out that people, if they could, I think it's a worthwhile thing to take advantage of if you have the emails of our newsletter, which every week has an easy Kiruv tool, some Kiruv ideas, some inspiration, and it's worthwhile to spend a few minutes to look it over and to see what you can use and take out of it. At Project Inspire, as much as we can, we try offering many different ways to reach out and many different ways of chizik and inspiration and continued education. So the newsletter is a constant every week update of this, and I think it's one of the greatest resources for people to simply use. And e-groups, if people have it, is a great chizik. When I sit down and I get all the different posts, as we call it, of the different groups as they go, I'm getting, hundreds a week, let's say, from across America. For me personally, because I get to see all of them, it's an amazing inspiration. But within every group, every one act of cure that you post, there's a few hundred other people seeing it and getting their renewed chizik from it. So if you have a moment to always post any little act of cure, from just smiling at someone to inviting someone for Shabbos, to an extreme case, which doesn't always happen, is learning with someone. But if you get there, that's also a chizik. So those are just a few points I wanted to say before Daniel continues. And it's my greatest honor and pleasure to have Daniel come to the podium and speak.
Okay, thank you so much, everyone. Thank you. I really want to thank everyone for their comments and their input. And just to add to what Chai is saying, I wrote a summary of all the points that hopefully we discussed and will discuss tonight, and hopefully it will be up this week in Kiruv.com. I will also unmute everyone. At this point, everyone is muted just for the noise control. But at some point, hopefully maybe in a half an hour, 40 minutes, I'll open up any questions, or maybe towards the end I'll open up any questions that people have that they want me to address specifically. Otherwise, what I'm going to do now is give a quick synopsis of what we discussed last week and then move on and hopefully get to the bread and butter and the practical cure, as much practical as possible. So let me just begin with actually a story, just because I always Hashem sends me stories of cure right before I'm about to speak. So I happen to just be coming back from a bar mitzvah, a very orthodox religious bar mitzvah in Muncie, New York. And you don't expect Kiruv to happen there, but Hashem, once you're in Kiruv mode, there's Kiruv all the time. So here I am. I'm a big Yeki, a British Yeki, and I showed up exactly on time. I still dream that someone's going to start things on time, especially because I have to speak tonight. So I'm coming to the Bar Mitzvah at 7 o'clock, and of course the only one that's there is the family taking pictures. And so they thanked me for coming on time, but kind of hinted that I should find something to do. So it used to be when I had nothing to do, I would go and I'd sit down, maybe the Gemara, find something very, let's say, productive to do. But this time I'm walking around, I'm thinking to myself, okay, what can I do? And I noticed that there's about five waiters, and obviously, quote-unquote, maybe once were frum, but not frum neighbor, waiters, and they're sitting around just chatting about whatever they're chatting about. And there, right then and then, I have that experience which I discussed last week, and I want to pick up from that. And that is, whenever you're going to have a cure of opportunity, the best sign that you can have as to knowing that you're having a cure of opportunity is when you don't want to do it. So what happens is the stomach starts having that incredible feeling of, oh gosh, I don't want this to happen. I'd rather go and rest. I'd rather go do something else. And of course, your stomach gets a little bit more nervous, and you're like, okay, maybe I should do something, maybe I shouldn't. So we said last week, I gave it the three-step rule. If a cure of opportunity comes your way, and you are trying to figure out if I should do something or not, just the fact that you have that stomach feeling, I call it, and that sense of, oh, I don't want to do anything, is the biggest sign that there's something great that's about to happen, and you should definitely get involved. Number two, the next step is you should daven. When you have such a feeling, that should only say, okay, I know I have a key of opportunity. I know Hashem wants me to do something. What should I do? I better start davening. I'm going to daven. Hashem, please help me out. And number three is trying to think what's the worst that can happen. Those are the three, so to speak, steps to removing the fear that initially hits a person when there's a cure of opportunity, because everyone on this phone and everyone that I always speak to and everyone that, and certainly myself, my biggest challenge was in cure, just to get rid of that annoying fear, which is, of course, natural and normal. So then I went over and I said hello, and I knew one of the boys actually there. And then for the next half hour, I gave a shiur about, we just smoothed about whether God exists, what exactly is the purpose of life, and it was amazing. I have to tell you, it was amazing. Again, I never could have done this even 2 years ago. It took me a while, but all I'm telling everyone on this call is that you could develop the ability to do this. You'll never get rid of the nervousness because it's so healthy. They say the greatest speakers are terrified when they get up to speak. So you don't even want to get rid of that nervous stomach, but it's the best sign, and once you just make that step, the results are amazing. Okay, so I'm just going to really share with you that this happened about an hour ago, and it always gives myself chizuk because I see more and more, especially I think from people that are on this call, I know almost maybe 100% end up dealing with Kiruv Klovin too. And really the principles that we're going to learn tonight apply 100% to Kiruv Klovin. And so whatever you're going to learn from tonight is really going to help you in that regard too. Okay. So to give a quick synopsis of what we discussed last week, based on my story with Avi, the holy neighbor named Avi, who lives across the street, and I found out that he exists. And as Shai was pointing out a few minutes ago, that this is an experience that could happen to anyone. You'll find out there's an Israeli person living across the street, and you didn't know about it, and you got to do something about it. So we discussed some of the catalysts that got me to go across, and I focused on two of them. To remind everyone, I focused, number one, on the fact that if Avi is really my brother, if we really know that, really believe that Jews are our brothers and sisters, so if there's a lady across the street or a man across the street and he's Jewish, they are our brothers, and that's how we have to treat it. And if we have brothers across the street, then we treat it differently. We're going to do something. Number two is what I said is that I felt when I found out there's a Jew across the street, and I was contemplating, should I go across the street? Should I not go across the street? Should I say something? Should I not say something? I knew that, number one, if I really love Hashem, how in the world can I not go across the street and tell everyone about it? And I told you, I did not know this was actually the words of the Rambam, but the Rambam in the third mitzvah of Avos Hashem, which we'll get back to a little bit later, spells this out explicitly. He says, Avraham Avinu went everywhere telling everyone about Hashem. Why? Because he loved him. So the litmus test of whether you love Hashem is, are you telling people about Hashem? Okay, now we're going to discuss exactly how to do that, because some people start thinking to themselves, well, if I'm not doing it, I don't love Hashem, which happens to be a little bit true, but how do I fix that? So we'll get back to that, God willing. Okay, let's go now to the next part, which is really, we began a little bit discussing the challenges that people have, why they do not do Kiruv. Okay, I think it pretty much sums up what most people have blocks doing Kiruv. And I basically wrote down seven. So the first one really is that most people somewhat lack social skills. It's a little bit sad to say, but we've lost the ability, as I pointed out, to say hello to people and to schmooze with people. And just the basic social skills have been lost. And therefore, people say, I can't do this. This is not me. I can't schmooze with people. I can't go across the street and say, hi, how you doing? Okay, number two is, even if someone feels he's somewhat has those social skills, many people say, I have no idea how to do Kiruv, right? The example was when I finally got across the street and the lady, Avi's wife, opened the door and she said, okay, well, can I help you? And I had no idea what to say. So we'll discuss that too. Number three is that people a little bit more from will say, when the mindset could be learning now. Not only that, I got to be Makar myself first, right? I was on the bus yesterday, Muncie Trails, and I'm looking forward to that nap in Muncie Trails, that amazing nap. And of course, Baruch Hashem, I'm sitting next to a Hasidic guy, and as I pointed out, and I will point out, I'm working on my social skills. So I say hello, I say Shalom Aleichem, I introduce myself, and I'm ready to go to bed, I'm ready to go to sleep. But the conversation just led into what do you do, what I do, and then once I got into Kiruv and I told him what I'm doing, so of course he was telling me why he feels he should not do Kiruv because he has to do the Karv himself first, which of course gave me the next half hour to tell him why he's wrong. Okay, number four is that people many times feel, well, they'll ask me something I don't know, and that's a very scary image right, imagery that a person can have. Oh, my gosh, they're going to ask me something I don't know, and I'm going to faint, and who knows. If anyone watched the Shvitzer in Kiruv.com, it's worthwhile. It brings that to this point very much. And number five, a sense of rejection, right? People think, actually, that not only are they going to get rejected, but actually it's going to make things worse. You don't want me being involved in Kiruv Krovim. All I'm going to do is cause Kiruv, is do Richuk Krovim. That's what many people tell me. You don't want me on the team. So we'll discuss that too. And number six, many people actually say, a very, very, and I think really from a good point, they'll say, well, we should be involved more in Kiruv Krovim. So I want to address that also. And the last point, number seven, which is a very interesting one, is that people will say that being involved in Kiruv is going to be a bad influence on my family. I just had a real intricate experience with that. So we're going to address those points too. Okay, so let's start with the just going through some of the points that I mentioned now. And if we get rid of these stumbling blocks, these fear blocks, then we'll see how easily we can really move into the mode of Kiruv, whether it's us or whether it's teaching others to do Kiruv. So number one, we said developing social skills. Well, the answer to that is, there's no doubt, is that it just takes practice. Even though someone wasn't necessarily always social and someone wasn't always saying hello and where you're from and being a schmoozer, which certainly ladies have a much better ability to do that than men. We all know that. Men basically, you know, man comes home and the wife asks him how the bar mitzvah was. It's about a three-word statement. It was great. And a wife, of course, comes home from a mitzvah, will describe that in 20 minutes, what the experience was. So we definitely know that the women are ahead in this regard, but really every person has to learn how to use the social skills that God endowed us with. And so how does that really come about? It's simply based on practice. If you decide that you're going to, from now on, be a little bit more social and be a little bit more open, even if it's uncomfortable and not really so natural, you'll soon feel much more comfortable, and that's what happens to me. Not only that, it's an incredible asset that when you start doing that, you really start just becoming a happier person. The world becomes a happier person, and also your relationship with your kids and everyone else becomes much, much better, as we'll soon see why. Okay, happens to be that also the ability to speak to people is really a source, one of the main sources of this obligation of Kiruv, right? The most basic source of Kiruv is actually the Tzichacha. Tzichacha really comes from the Pasuk, Lechech Tzichachas Amisecha. What does that mean? Tzichacha basically means if you see someone doing something wrong, you have an obligation to correct them. Now, of course, tzichacha doesn't mean the way it's translated in English many times, to rebuke, which basically gives a picture of someone basically standing with a lot of stones in his hand, waiting for someone to be Mechal Shabbos, and he pellets him with stones and says, Shabbos, Shabbos, Shabbos. That's not what tzichacha is. Rashi says tzichacha is correction. It's showing proof, showing exactly why this is not a good idea. It's not the right thing to do. Okay, so that's the first step. We have to know that we have to get used to telling a person, look, this is not the best thing for you. I'll give you an example. It just happens to be how far sometimes we are. I happen to live in Yeshiva, as I told you, and it was about a week and a half ago. And it was Memorial Day. And happens to be Memorial Day, so people were off. And there were three ladies roller skating. It was an amazing sight. Three ladies came to the yeshiva roller skating. They obviously thought the school was off. And they were roller skating in the circle while the entire yeshiva was davening. That's the picture. They obviously did not know what they were doing. Again, they weren't wearing modest clothing. And they were, speaking to each other. It was about 8 in the morning, davening is going on, and the whole yeshiva is staring at three women roller skating, and no one knows what to do. No one knows what to do. So finally, in fact, someone came over to me and asked, why the three naked ladies roller skating in front of the yeshiva? There's quite a scene. So thank God there was there are ladies that work in the yeshiva, and one lady actually walked over and said and explained to them, this is actually yeshiva's going on, etc. I don't know exactly what she said, but they basically left the scene. But this is a perfect example of where really sometimes we have no idea what to do. I'm just going to give you one more example, which happens so often where I live in Muncie, but in very firm communities, it happens now quite often. and someone asked me this question, and I'll tell you a response to this, and this will give you an idea of what I mean by proper correction. So this guy comes to me and tells me that he was recently in a very in one of the big food stores, okay, very religious, where most basically only religious people shop. It happens to be many non-Jewish people will come and shop for kosher food. So it happens to be that a lady came in and wanted to shop for food, but she wasn't dressed modestly, and she basically was surrounded by, I think, like five Hasidim telling her that she can't shop in the store. Now, of course, this person who was asking this question wanted to come to her rescue, and it wasn't the greatest scene. And he asked me then, you know, eventually the lady left, and it was a very unfortunate situation. So he asked me, what would be the right way to do things, right, instead of surrounding her and calling the police. Now, they didn't call the police, but they somewhat escorted her out. So the truth is there are signs. There are signs on the store. That was one of their claims. But the question is, what would have been the right action? So I told him very simple. I would say it like this. I would say, instead of surrounding her with Hasidic men, I would have said, there are ladies that work there in the store, and it should be already something that they are ready for. A lady could go over, and she could tell her, first of all, thank you so much for coming. Welcoming her and telling her, thank you so much for coming. And then explaining to her, you know, there's a little bit of a challenge. There is a sign outside the store, you may have missed it, and it says you have to dress modestly. I happen to have an idea how to solve that. We actually have a shawl that you could wear, or maybe you have an idea how to solve the challenge, but we really would love you to shop here. I gave him that, and when he heard that, his eyes lit up. He said, wow, why can't I thought of that? And the truth is I didn't do anything brilliant, really. It's much easier, of course, to look at the situation afterwards. But what I really did is I took the words of the Rambam in Yesod HaTorah, who tells the exact methodology of Teichacha, and it's very important for everyone to hear this. It's a three-step process. Number one, when you want to give Teichacha, that means you want to correct someone, do it with love. You have to have tremendous love. And we'll discuss that a little bit more, how to love a person. But that's the first step. Number two, you do it in private as much as you can. Definitely not causing a scene, taking a person to the side and then trying to explain to them. And thirdly, the Rambam says, telling them that you're doing it for their benefit. You're doing it for their benefit, whether it's because of Olam Haba or practical benefit. They're going to feel embarrassed. They're going to feel right, a little bit ashamed, so et cetera. So the idea is really taking Teichacha and really using it to develop our ability to speak to people. It could be done. It could be developed. I'm telling you straight out, I never would have been able to think this through. It's only because I'm getting more and more involved and more questions that I see, hey, this is an easy way to speak to someone, and you get to the person, and they appreciate it so much more. Okay, so that was the number one point of Teichacha and social skills. Number two, I said, how do you start doing cures? So certainly, like I said, there's an amazing statement from the Chinuch, and this is going to apply to all the cure process. It's called Adam Nifal Ketzi Pe'uloisav. An amazing statement that the Chinuch said it means, as Rav Avigdor Miller used to say, exteriority bestirs interiority, which means if you do the actions, eventually it's going to, the characteristics are going to be internalized in you. You do the actions of someone who cares, you do the action of someone who wants to do kiruv, it's going to become part of you. That's exactly what I did. People sometimes say, okay, so how can I do kiruv? Please help me, I want to do kiruv. The first thing is, do the actions of kiruv. If the actions of kiruv include going and speaking to people, do the actions. You're going to feel foolish and embarrassed many times, countless of times, but eventually you're going to be good at it, and it's the most amazing, it's so worthwhile. Okay, number three, as people have pointed out, that what about cure on yourself? Doesn't that come first? So this, you know, when you hear that statement, it's like it should ring in your head that besides the Sfarim HaKadoshim, all the amazing books that write, that if you bring someone closer to Hashem, just one Jew closer to Hashem, you're better than the greatest tzaddik. Now, this sounds like an amazing statement, a powerful statement. This is also in Chovas HaLevavos. Chovas HaLevavos and Shal Avas Hashem, appropriately, in the love of Hashem, he says this statement. Chovas HaLevavos is a book that was actually told to the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, by a malach, right, who came to study with him. This is a book you should study. So it has a good haskama, besides the fact that it's studied in all the yeshivas, etc., and the Chasam Sofer. So we don't have to really give haskamas or the chovas alavos. And he says that even if a person would work on himself his entire life, he is not close to someone who brings one person closer to Hashem. So you have to remember that the, you know, working on yourself is great, but if you're not focused on others, you're not going to reach a level that you really aspire to. And jokingly, I tell people who actually say, well, I have to be makar of myself first, I say, well, look, you've been trying for this amount of years. It doesn't seem to work. Maybe try something new. Okay, it's a little bit harsh, that joke, but I think it really says the point. And moreover, clearly there's a concept called neither connected neither. If you're looking out for Hashem's children, you're really treating like it's Hashem's children, there's no doubt that Hashem is going to say, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to help you become a better person and be closer to Hashem. Okay. Number four that we mentioned was that they might ask me something that I don't know. So I love this question, and I love just addressing this fear, because I think maybe this is the most common one. When I was in Brooklyn speaking, so a woman actually asked me this statement. She said, I'm so scared they're going to ask me something I don't know. And my response to that was, Halevai! Halevai! I wish. And she had no idea what I meant by that, but I meant very simply, because what would you rather happen? Would you rather come up to Shemaim after 120 and Hashem's going to turn to you and say, no, so do you know why you're Jewish? Do you know Torah is really true or not? And you're going to have no idea how to explain to God himself. So when someone asks you questions that you don't know, it's the greatest gift that Hashem is sending you, because down on here on earth, and you can actually now go and look it up. I have to tell you, this was one of my most, I would say, powerful tools when I was developing my ability to reach out. For the first 2 years, when someone would ask me a question, I would say, great question, I don't know. I don't know the answer clearly. I think I know. I don't know. And I'll be honest, if I knew the answer, I would tell them. But if I wasn't sure, I would say, I'm not clear. I want to look it up, and I want to study it with you. That was literally my, it was just what I did. It was my regular response, and it did wonders. You know why? Because when you say to someone, great question, it empowers the person, it lifts the person, Shelas Chacham Chatzi Tshuva, which means that every question is a good question. It's many times half the answer, and there's so much to learn from it. So therefore, that the fact that someone's going to ask you a question and you might not know the answer is literally the greatest gift that can happen. Okay, next. I don't want to make things worse, right? That's what we mentioned last week. And as I mentioned the following, I said, if you daven, there's no way you're going to mess up. And even when things look like you're going to mess up, it is not, it's only going to bring to good, even if it literally looks terrible. Like I mentioned the story last week from Gilak, I'm not going to repeat it now. You could listen to it in the first class. Such a powerful, but I have so many stories like that where literally it looked so terrible, and it looked like the person was so upset. I've had this many conversations with my wife where I thought I went too far and I did too much, and then lo and behold, I get a phone call saying, thank you so much for whatever you did. So in general, if you daven and ask Hashem to help you, you will not see bad results. I'm willing to guarantee that. Okay, next. What about Q of Krovim? So this is an important point. Certainly, Q of Krovim is tops. It could be, in fact, Rav Melech Weinberg Zichron Vocha felt that actually comes first before Kiruv HaChokim, because it's a greater Chilul Hashem. That question is debatable, but the real answer is, when you're misfalo about Chaveroi, you're not Natchila, which means when you are concerned about your friend or here Hashem's children, Hashem is going to help you with your children so much more. And the truth is, I deal with more Kiruv HaChokim than Kiruv HaChokim, unfortunately. And what happens is, when you develop your skills for Kiruv HaChokim, Hashem gives you such siyata d'shmaya with Kiruv Krovim that it's obviously because of what you're doing for Hashem with His distant children. So therefore, it's really one unit, and it works together. I have a letter from a 16-year-old Beis Yaakov girl who wrote recently a letter thanking us for these home Kiruv trainings that we do. I can't read the whole letter, but it was mind-boggling how much chizuk in the fundamentals of Yiddishkeit that somehow she cannot bring up in her classroom, and her friends got such chizuk that it's clear to me that Project Inspire happens to be doing an amazing work also with Q of Krovim. Okay, and lastly, concern for your family. Okay, this is a very important point. I happen to just have an experience with a whole family who got involved with reaching out, and she was extremely happy with the situation. Her children were excited. It was amazing, but she had a neighbor in the Muncie community that said, I think this is wrong. Your children should not be hanging out with non-Frum children, etc., and became a big sichfil, had to go to a big rebbe. Very interesting. And I learned a lot from this. I'll tell you the following. There is an amazing pasuk in Yirmiyahu Perek Tesvav pasuk Yutes that says in Tzitzia Karmi Zoler Kefitia, an amazing pasuk which basically says explicitly, if you bring someone closer to Hashem, you will only be protected and you will not be harmed by anyone. You will not be harmed by the people that you're being mekarv. It's a guarantee. However, of course, you have to be responsible. So I'm not here to tell you what to do when it comes to very specific cases of neighbors where it's more complicated, then certainly ask your Rav. But just in general, it is clear, the siyata d'shmaya that a person gets is specifically a protection for yourself. It doesn't make sense that it's not making sense. The Rabban Shem guarantees you that you will be protected as long as you act responsibly, and that's an important point to remember. Okay. I want to now literally go through the steps of cure. If we understand that we remove some of the fears of what every human being has before reaching out, so now we can actually step into the process. And it's quite simple. There are a few steps here, but once you practice these steps in your mind and then do them when they happen, when the scenario happens, you will see how it becomes part of you. So when I begin by saying the steps of cure, which are really small steps one at a time, I, of course, begin with the most basic one, which is passive cure. Shai just mentioned this point. When I began saying, okay, I'm going to do cure, so I really began with a passive cure. What does a passive cure mean? It means that, first of all, no more richuk krovin. What does that mean? Or richuk yidin. It means from now on, you are being the car of every single second because of your actions. So you're becoming a person who is now, from now on, going to be watched by people, whether it's, and I give examples, shopping cart, right? There are some people that have the most amazing bitachon and they think they could go shopping in a store, take the shopping cart, unload the shopping cart, put all the stuff in the car, and then a mile away where the car is parked, somehow give a little shove to the shopping cart, and it will somehow, miraculously, through tremendous bitachon, fly back into, roll back into the, right next to the store into the pile of other shopping carts while there are three cars trying to pass by. I've seen this happen. That's why I make this very dramatic. The point is, kiruv has to begin with being a mensch, watching out for what you're doing. People are watching you. A non-Frum person watching a Jew do that. It's a Frum Jew do that. It's a first, claim to, oh, come on, where's your consideration? And certainly this extends to other things like double parking. The best one is smiling. Here is an amazing thing. It's a mitzvah to smile. It's a mission of Jyoti Ovis. And I'm telling you the truth. I remember before I got into Kiruv, although I tried to be a nice person, but you don't feel that sense of obligation. You have to walk around smiling all the time. But the truth is, when you're walking around smiling and you see people in the store or shopping and you're just smiling, even if you're not saying anything, it makes another person smile too or be happy. And that's the first process of cure, because if you're a happy person, people want to be like you. And they think, why is this person happy? Why is this person happy? So I'm telling you, it's an amazing cure tool. Just to give you a chazal, really, there's a famous story that I think it was Avishar Salanter who saw a Frum Jew during the month of El walking around with a very sour face, and he turned to him and he said, you are a bol b'rshus harabim. That means you're pit, a walking pit, because anyone who looks at you is basically going to be depressed. You have an obligation to walk around smiling. Okay, that's an example of passive cure. Let's now take it to the next step. What we're going to do is, in order to make this very much tachlis-oriented, a real-life scenario, we're going to create a scenario. This is a scenario that's pretty common. You're at the mall with your family, and I'm going to just imagine I'm speaking, let's say, to a lady, and you're with your kids, and you're standing at the mall, and you're next to, the carousel or some store, and you're with your kids, and there's another lady there. And, of course, in the beginning, you're not sure if she's even Jewish. You might see some signs. You might see a chai necklace. You might hear her say something. You probably will be bageled, right? The famous term of being bageled means they're going to eventually throw something Jewish, or you're going to hear something Jewish. And you're going to have that first sort of the cue of opportunity, or the 100th cue of opportunity, and your stomach is going to start bubbling and going to feel really nervous. And this is when you're going to start using my process that I'm going to describe to you right now. Okay, so you're at the mall. The first step is a lady there. You're not sure if she's Jewish or not. The kids look a little bit Jewish. You're not sure? So the first thing is get rid of that fear, okay? If your stomach is already, by the way, there's a rule actually. If they give you a second look many times, that's already an indication that they are Jewish. But okay, but besides that, there's a mitzvah to say hello to every human being. Again, unless they're very scary and dangerous, but there's a nice lady with her kids there. To say hello, where you're from, is nice. It's a beautiful thing. Now, you're probably going to have that fear to get rid of it. What are the three steps? You're going to have the feeling, recognize it's the right thing to do. This is your opportunity. Number two, daven, and then start thinking what's the worst that's going to happen, that she's going to tell you, I'm not interested in speaking to you, right? Keep your mouth shut. Okay, then you keep your mouth shut. That's it. It won't happen, but that's the best way to make a calculation to move to the next step. Now, here's step one of the cure process. It's saying hello. As I just pointed out, every human being, there's a mitzvah to greet every human being. It's a mission of Pirkei Avos. You say hello. Number two, what is the most basic method that is needed for cure? It's one word, and that is love. Avos. Avos Abrius, right? It's a mission of Pirkei Avos. Oyeves Abrius and Mekavan Latar. You have to remember, you want to be Mekav someone, you want to bring someone closer, you got to love them. You can't skip this stage. There's no skipping. Now, so if we want to develop this, we just have to define what does love mean. I'm always perplexed. I'm totally shocked. But the truth is, I was like this myself. Before I got into cures, I would ask people, okay, so no, can you define love? So anyone who did not take cure training will probably not on this phone will not be able to answer that question. It's amazing how some people, I say, you know, you say every single day, V'ahavta Eitz Hashem Elokecha, your kids sing the tune, V'ahavta Eitz Hashem Elokecha, you shall love Hashem, you put your kids to bed, V'ahavta Eitz Hashem Elokecha. Did you ever turn to your kids and say, or did your kids have asked you, well, what does that exactly mean to love Hashem? Now, it sounds a little bit strange, but the truth is, if you don't have a definition of something, then it's very likely you will never get there, because in order to really get somewhere, you have to have a definition. So here is an amazing Rambam. The Rambam defines what does love mean. He actually defines love, and when I heard this, it blew me away. I heard this from Rav Noach Weinberg, and then I saw it's the exact words of the Rambam, just not in English. So, Rav Noach Weinberg, Zichron Vracha, said, what is love? It's the emotional pleasure a person experiences when focusing on the virtues of another. Again, when you identify someone by their positive characteristics, that is love. It's the emotional experience. And if you look in the Rambam in the third mitzvah, he's explicit. You have to have that experience of the emotional experience. It's an amazing pleasure that you experience when you focus on someone's virtues. And again, when you now know this, this is the key. Because now you could answer an obvious question. How in the world am I commanded to love another Jew, right? Either I love them or I don't. I would say an example. If you want to test this out, test it on your next person that you're sitting with that you might dislike, okay? And you're sitting with a person, and you dislike them. Something bothers you about them. Can you now be obligated to love them? Can you force yourself to love them? And the answer is absolutely yes. And therefore, you have the ability to love every human being. So how do you love? You love by, in your mind, while they're speaking to you, and they're telling you all the narishkeit that you're not interested in listening, start listing in your head three positive qualities about this person. You will see quickly how your dislike for this person goes away. If you look into their eyes and try to see beyond the face the externalities, which we're so used to judging people by, you will start seeing that you will actually, you may not love them, but you'll certainly develop more of a liking to them. And that's a skill. And therefore, the first step is you got to know what love means. Love means to look at a person and see beyond the external shell, the external looks, specifically if someone non-Tum and they're not wearing proper clothing, etc. You have to look and say, I know there's a neshama here, and I can actually start seeing qualities, nice qualities about the person. That is the first step. There's a lot to speak about this person, but the bottom line is, if you want to love a person, you gotta learn how to know the person, literally. Vayeda Adam is Ishtar. That's the first time it actually discusses intimacy relations in the Torah, and it uses the word Vayeda, to know. In fact, a wise man once said, intimacy means in to me see. That's real relationship. Husband and wife, in to me see. That's intimacy. because until you don't know a person, you don't really love them. Why is this so important? Because I found in my experience that many times I made this mistake all the time. I used to rush things. I used to try to think, okay, how can I be mekayem this person quickly? And the truth is, it's skipping. Because if you love someone, the first thing you do when you meet someone, you meet your brother, your sister, you haven't seen in many years, you get to know them. You get to know all about them. And you will see why this is, by the way, a crucial step of really being mekayem someone. I'm not talking about when you only have 30 seconds, which we'll discuss in a moment what to do, but when you're normally, almost in every occasion when you're meeting someone, get to know them. I'll give you an example. I play basketball in the JCC. I had like this few team that I play, and now I play with many, many non-Swim Yidden, Jews that play basketball. I love basketball. And it happens to, when I get on the court, if I meet someone new, I'll, of course, ask them the name. Most of them are Jewish anyway. But I'll ask them the name, and many times I say it'll be Steven. This is the last guy that I actually met on the basketball court. And his name was Steven. Now, Steven is Jewish. And I didn't even know he was Jewish, but he told me his last name. I said, that sounds pretty Jewish. That's an easy way of speaking to someone and finding out they're Jewish or not. If you ask them, so what's your name? They'll say their name or what's your last name. Well, so nice. Normally you can actually say, oh, it sounds Jewish. And they'll tell you yes or no. So this person said, yeah, I'm Jewish. I said, what's your Hebrew name? My first almost question that I asked people is, what's their Hebrew name? For many reasons. Besides Hasidically and Kabbalistically, you connect to a person much deeper on his Hebrew name because that's really the root of his neshama. It opens up so much conversation. It opens up so much of how you could connect with a person. But here's the key. I met this guy on the court. Now, if you play basketball, you know, you don't have so much time. But throughout the game, we just schmoozed where you're from. By the end of the game, and I'm not kidding, I knew this guy. His Hebrew name happened to be Yechiel Eliyahu. Beautiful name. It's amazing how they have such beautiful names still. And by the end of the game, I knew his father, his parents were divorced. I knew where he had a bar mitzvah. I knew he had a cousin in Atlanta who was actually from. I had so much information about the person that it was a totally different game. Before I even spoke about anything religious, I knew this person. That is the key. By the way, just as a nice tool to know, there is actually a link on H.com that's called Literacy Life Cycles. It's called Boys' Names, Girls' Names. If you Google it, you'll see that you can have so much about a person's name and their birthday, etc., and you can actually, once you make contact with this person, which we'll discuss in a moment, right, you meet a person and you're exchanging, you say, hey, why don't we be in touch? Or, by the way, there's an amazing site that discusses different names and the significance of the names. So here's a great tool for a person to easily show them something about the name and even keep in touch through email or, you know, just call them up and share with them that information. But it's powerful. Okay, so what I say is like this. You're loving a person. When it comes to loving a person, it's getting to know them. Next, the B of this is to become a good listener. When you start knowing a person, the key is start listening to really what they're saying. And you will see amazing things happen. Because when you listen well, you will realize all the different blocks, all the different things that are bothering them. You will understand their personality too, and you'll be able to actually address and help them in the cure process. There are different personalities out there. There are many people that are interested in personal growth. You can ask them, by the way, when they, let's say, I was giving an example, they'll start telling you, yeah, I was bar mitzvah, I went to Hebrew school, it was terrible, right? Most of them had a bad experience. You can ask them and even figure out, just in conversation, what type of personality they have. That you could ask them, if you had more time or if you were able to do this, would you be interested in growing more in your Judaism? Would you be interested in personal growth, right? Topics like love and happiness. Would you be interested in philosophy? Does God exist? Is Torah really true? Or just practical commandments? In general, those are three different categories of different people will be interested in different things. And the opening to that was really just his conversation with you about his experience in the Hebrew school. Many people would love to come over and make challah with you. Again, if you're a lady and a man. Right? And my wife had invited someone for challah, a neighbor, and it was an amazing experience. They have no idea what challah is all about. And we have so many of these challah groups. Imagine bringing someone who never did challah in her life and learning how to make challah. So it's an easy way to ask someone if they're interested in learning how to make challah. I, by the way, just, even though, look, I've been doing kiur for almost 4 years. And just this past Friday night, we had someone over, and a very nice, really nice person. His name is Mendel. And I'm telling him different things, and then my wife even tells me, straight out, says, I think she told me afterwards nicely, but she said, you know, he's not the intellectual type. He's more experiential. And you were totally right. But you see, many times you'll fall into that trap of just, you just heard something amazing, intellectually amazing and stimulating, when a person really just likes some vodka, cholent, and a good dessert, and that will be macabre much faster. Okay. The next part of this, by the way, I actually heard that someone just told me, said, until someone asks you 7 times a specific question, you don't answer it. You'll evade, could avoid it, because there is always something else that really is bothering them. Now, I don't think he really meant 7 times. It could be. The point is, when you listen to a person, you will start realizing so much more is behind that question, and many times they're not really interested in the question itself. Okay. I'm going to break now for the following reason. I'm going to tell you what happens, which is what many times people have this question. Okay, I'm at the mall, but I don't have a half an hour to schmooze about the Hebrew school, etc. I said hello. She said hello. She told me she's from, this in this town. She told me where her father, I always ask, where are your parents from? Where are your grandparents from? This is an amazing, it just opens up so many different things, especially you can find out if they're really Jewish or not. But it's always interesting to find out where a person is from and the stories behind their parents and how much they sacrifice. It's mind-boggling. People sometimes, when they do care, they say, I have nothing to say to the person. There is so much to schmooze about. You just have to start thinking big, thinking just history, all about the person. If you're interviewing the person for a book, again, you don't try to act like you're interviewing the person. But if you were interviewing the person, you would ask so many different questions to find out. In any case, so let's say you don't have so much time, but you did schmooze with them, you know where they're from, etc. An easy way, okay, I'm specifically focusing now just for 2 minutes on what's called a quick encounter, okay, a hit and run, so to speak. And that is, after you schmooze them, you could say, are you familiar with the best Jewish website out there? There's an amazing website called H.com. That's one way where you could get someone to H.com, which obviously is an amazing website. Please check it out if you never did. And once the person probably will say no, it's interesting, and say, I got to send you a link to that website. It's amazing. Or if you're carrying yourself a card, definitely get those Kotel Cam cards. You could tell a person, have you ever been to Israel? Many times in the conversation, you'll be speaking about it, and you'll say, well, you ever been to Israel? And they'll say, no. And you could be by the Kotel live. I was just showing someone recently, literally watching the Kotel live, just in the comfort of your seat at home. And they'll be perplexed. They'll be so shocked about that. And you could either give them a card or say, here, give me your email. Let's exchange emails, and I'll send you a link to that. This way you could be in touch with them further. If there was a topic that you were speaking about, like I could just say the name, you could tell them about, listen, I'll send you a link to that that website. Certainly, H.com is one of the best tools to reach out. Another easy thing, if you have some of these cards that Project Inspire provides us with, which are amazing, one of them is a John Adams card. You ask people, do you want to see something that the second president of the United States said about the Jews? It's mind-boggling. And either you have the card with you, which is really one of my favorite cards that now I use. I never really thought I could use cards, but I got so used to it. It's just amazing. I just gave one out this past Friday to someone who walked into a gas station, and obviously was Jewish. He was wearing a chai. I said, you got to check out what the second president of the United States said about the Jews. Very different than Obama. In any case, my wife also, my wife, like I point out, wasn't into Kiruv. She said for the first 3 months of me doing Kiruv, she said, you're doing Kiruv, I'm doing my stuff. But then now, she goes to someone, she has these cards with her, she'll be an optometrist, she'll give out this card and say, check out, a really cool card. The reason why it's amazing to use this card is because of the fact that it also has H.com on the bottom. Okay, next part. When you, as I pointed out, we're going to go back a little bit more, where you're speaking to someone and you're developing some level of connection, here is where the most powerful class called the Four Misconceptions plays an amazing role. So I don't know how many people are familiar with the Four Misconceptions, but I want to show you. We're not going to have time because I know we always run out of time here. Baruch Hashem, we're moving further and further into the Q process. This is really the we really stepped into the meat of the cure process. But the four misconceptions is one of the greatest tools. Now, just to give you a Rosh Teva for the four misconceptions, it's JAKP, J-A-K-P, judging all or nothing, K is for knowledge, and P is for pleasure. This class, the first few times that I heard it, I thought it was just an interesting class about cure, but I didn't understand how this can be used in the cure process. But I would like to show you how this is the most amazing tool for literally picking up all the questions that people are asking you, are really asking you. So like I pointed out, love of a person, which we began with, is understanding, is hearing them out, and it's really figuring out what's blocking them. Just to give you one story as an introduction to this, because I think it's so powerful, and hopefully we'll make this to be continued. I hope Shai is okay with that. I want to give you the following story that happened to me. I was invited to a family member who had a few kids, and this was actually Pesach time, and one of the kids, unfortunately, was going off the derech, and, of course, the other kids somewhat were ganging up against him. There were big arguments, and me, the New York Koran, was invited. We were invited because we were family, but the goal was to, so to speak, prove that there is a God, and there is Torah Mesinai, and we should be celebrating Pesach. So you can imagine the scenario. Here I am, Pesach night, eating matzahs, and there's someone that's going up the deck who's claiming that all this is nonsense, and he has his brothers and sisters ganging up against him, saying he's totally wrong, and the neocon is being asked to convince and say the truth. So, of course, I fell into the trap initially of trying to explain, well, it's pretty obvious, we could show that it's true, etc., and I saw that that wasn't really what's going to solve the problem, was making things much worse. Of course, I got the cheering from the other kids, and this person, and the other person who I had some connection to and trust, was getting more and more distant away from me. So I realized I better change my tune. And what I did was I used the four misconceptions. And I have to tell you, the next morning, we were walking to the park together, and this boy turns to me, and he says, I want to tell you that I know you're right. I know the Torah is true. I know that there's a God. But I'm not interested. I'm interested right now in, I'm a high school boy. I'm interested in everything else that's out there. But I want you to tell, I want you to know that when you said this and this and that to me, which were the four misconceptions, I felt much more that I could trust you. And when I experienced the story, it told me so much, almost specifically with Q of clothing, almost every case where someone is saying, oh, there's no God, Torah is not true, etc., it's a mask, and they're really calling for some real connection and trust, and if you don't build that, you will never get anywhere with them. And therefore, just let's take the first of the four misconceptions, and God willing, we'll continue next time with the next three. The number one misconception that unfortunately is not a misconception is that non-Frum people or even Frum people feel judged by Frum people. That means if a non-Frum person comes into Muncie, they are walking around with that incredible fear, and I wish it was a misconception that all Frum Jews think that they're better than this person. Why? Because they keep the Torah. They are religious. And I, the person who's not Frum, coming from a non-Frum city, is not keeping the Torah, and therefore I'm not as good as them. Now, when someone walks around with that fear, whether it's even true or not, it's terrible. It's the greatest block to have any connection. If someone comes over and says, hi, I want to share with you some beautiful idea about Torah, the first thing they're thinking is, this person judges me. This person thinks he's better than me. How can I even have a connection? If everyone remembers, you know, just to walk into a classroom where you feel like everyone is judging you, that's the greatest terror. It's so fearful, and it's the worst experience. So in order, when we realize that Judaism doesn't allow us to judge other people, what does that mean? Judaism teaches the most amazing line in Masechet Sanhedrin that says, "My chazis, the dama didach sumak tfei midama didei," which means if a gun is held to my head, and I'm told to kill a bum on the street, I'm not allowed to kill that person. Why? Because even if I could be the Chafetz Chaim, I could be the biggest tzaddik, I still don't know if my blood is more red than the blood of this bum on the street. Now, of course, how can that be? And the answer is very simple, because every neshama was born with different chesronos and different disadvantages and a different upbringing, etc. And therefore, we have no idea who is great in the eyes of Hashem. Why is this the most amazing tool for Kiruv? Because if you're able to give that over, if you're able to look at a person who's not from, or even from and went off the derech, and see a neshama and say, there, you don't have to say it to the person. You just have to feel it. You have to be thinking it. This person could be greater than I. This person is a neshama. It could be in the most, most amazing, close neshama to Hashem. And therefore, I'm not better than the person. If I was growing up where they're growing up, I probably wouldn't keep any mitzvahs. You start thinking that way, they will feel it. It's a pasuk in Mishlei, Kamayim apanim lapanim ken lev adam laadam, which means what is going on in your heart, the other heart will reflect it. And certainly when they say things like, you know, every time I come to Muncie, I feel very, or Borough Park, or wherever it is, I feel like everyone's judging me. The first thing you should say is, you know, Judaism teaches you're not allowed to judge another Jew, and explain to them why. Don't defend it. One of the best traps, the worst traps, is try to say, oh, they don't judge you. First of all, it's not true. And even if it was true, the real way is to explain what Judaism says. Like the expression is, don't judge Judaism by Jews. It's very, very true. You have to teach what Judaism teaches. Judaism teaches, we don't know who is close in the eyes of Hashem. And I'm telling you, this is the most powerful tool, because probably the most common misconception that people are walking around with is exactly this. Okay, I'm going to stop with this misconception. Baruch Hashem, I think we got much further into the literally the meat of Kiruv, as I pointed out. And if you go and review what I said, it'll be extremely helpful. And maybe, God willing, if there's interest, we will do another class. I'm going to actually unmute everyone at this point. If anyone has any questions, I'll take them in the next 5 minutes. 1 second.
Danielle, do you want to set up a specific date?
I'm okay setting up a date, because it's a pleasure. Let me just think a second. Maybe Shai will send something out. I could do next week, if there's an interest.
So what day next week? I think that's before camp starts or something like that. When was
The 23rd?
Oh, you mean a week from today?
I think that should work. I think in one more class we could probably finish it. Does anyone have any questions? I'll take it. I'm sorry that we only have 3 minutes for questions.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
What if it's not that they have questions, they're not interested? Like, they just have no interest to learn about it.
Say that again. Because there's a little crackle.
It's not that they have so many questions that you have to explain. It's just that they're not interested in learning about it. They're very happy with their life.
Oh, excellent question. Thank you very much. Basically what you're saying is apathy. And in fact, maybe that's the most common situation today. So the way to address that is really the last misconception. So God willing, I will discuss it next week. It's a little bit longer than a two-minute answer. Basically, just to give you a quick answer, is that you have to be able to show another person, another Jew, and you have to know it yourself, that Judaism is really the source of the greatest pleasure. So many people actually think, I'm speaking from a film person's point of view, you see someone with a beautiful house, a beautiful pool, great family, right? Three cool cars. You think to yourself, as a film person, why should I even bother these people? They look really happy, and they're not looking for anything else in their life. And even when I speak to them about Torah, they're like, okay, right? Nothing against it, but okay. But the truth is, I experienced this. Happens to be with a family that I'm dealing with. And when you slowly learn with them, and you address different topics like marriage, you'll suddenly see how they are dying for Torah knowledge on marriage and everything else in life. It just looks from the outside like it's healthy. It can't be healthy. It can't be that they really are tranquil and happy, because when you go deep into the fabric of a family, if you don't have Torah, that's what a frum Jew should know, specifically us. If you don't have Torah, you can't be living it up. You can't. And I'm willing to challenge that for anyone who says they can. But it's an important point. So God willing, we'll discuss that a little bit more next week.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Hatzlacha, everyone. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much.
Shai, thank you for putting this together.
No problem. Thank you, Daniel, and we'll do it again next week, Tuesday, same time, same place.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hatzlacha. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.